sir. I mean, you can take the meeting.
Officially calling the meeting to order of the ANC 1D on June 3rd, 2008. Commissioners present at this time, McKay, Bosserman, Edwards, Scott,
and Tunda.
Not Tundra. Tunda. The time by my watch is 7:07. Good. 7:07 on the computer screen as well. And we're going to be starting with open discussion, public discussion.
Do I want to say, I don't think they want to hear my comments.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, I'm one of those people, let me introduce myself. I'm Dr. Fred Olson, professor of history at Northern Virginia Community College in Alexandria. I mention that because I'm a reverse commuter. And I've been here since 1975, and when I came here, I didn't drive. But after a year, I decided the bus service only gotten worse. It used to be I could get to school in two buses, now it's two trains and one bus, an hour and a half. So I do drive down Rock Creek and reverse commute 395. One of my colleagues introduced me to Klingel Road once when he gave me a ride when my car broke down, and it was very convenient. And so I'm like some people, not too happy. I understand you all, unlike previous ANC, opposed reopening it. And I know there are reasons, but I can get along without it. It used to be very convenient to get to Georgetown. Well, I don't go to Georgetown very often anymore. And it is convenient occasionally when Rock Creek, like I sometimes go to work in the afternoon when I don't have morning classes, and they close Rock Creek for who knows what reasons, repairs and such. And that used to be a good way to get around. Now I have to go up Porter Street and, you know, no left turn signal in Connecticut and all that congestion and a lot of more pollution. And I'm cursing the mayor and other people, not our present mayor. Actually, I like the last mayor too, but I still curse them when I'm going up, when I'm caught in traffic. And what really I think really upsets me more than anything else, quite frankly, is the fact that the Cleveland Park Few, as one of the local papers called them, won out. And also the attitude of the environmentalists. I remember walking down Adams Morgan. I can walk. I'm not a typical American. Walking down Adams Morgan to shop, and environmentalists had a table down there almost just a few feet away from 18th Street and Calvert Street, and they wanted people to sign up to pose Klingel Road. Well, that's nice, because they got Calvert Street, they got Duke Ellington Bridge. And so, you know, and I remember the comments the environmentalists made that they were a little embarrassed, I think, because they came to the aid of the Cleveland Park Few, and then they were embarrassed, I think. They said, well, people in Mount Pleasant are just rushing the kids over to private schools. That sort of discussion, that went on. And I was very pleased today in the paper that someone actually suggested a compromise. That's the American way, I think. And unfortunately, I think for the environmentalists, it's their way or no way. All roads are bad, I guess. And so, although I can get along without Klingel Road, it's convenient, one of the local columnists in one of the local papers had a former news reporter, I forget his name, Sherman something or other, he had a nice comment about closing Klingel Road, and he said, well, maybe they should close Porter Street, too. And I thought, good idea. And, you know, I have some favorite merchants in Cleveland Park, and I'm not sure. I mean, there was some of the comments in the local paper sort of suggested that, you know, they say, well, we can shop in Columbia Heights, we don't need to go there, and so on. Well, actually, one wouldn't take Klingel to go over to Cleveland Park, doesn't make sense, but the tone of the comments I haven't appreciated. And so their councilman rolled one out, ours lost out. And like, you know, Jim Graham, I consider myself an environmentalist too. I think we all should be. I mean, say I walk, I have a small car, I learned to drive very late in life. I just sort of resent the fact they won out, and no compromise. They, Ward 3. And I'm not the only one in the neighborhood. I mean, I was talking to one of my neighbors the other day about deciding to make it into a bike path, and he said, well, no one will use it. Well, I was just, I think that lady wrote a letter to the editor today saying it should be, you know, make it a road to close it on the weekends so we can ride our bikes on it. She had a good point. I'd rather ride on a road than on a bike path. Some of these bike paths are so narrow. I assume they'll make it a little different, but... Anyway, so some of us are a little unhappy, and I'm not sure you're representing us, and I,
Do you know our reasons?
Well, I hope you're grounded in some science that you really think this is a bad place to build a road for environmental reasons. I mean, the comment's been that, well, after all, it's Ward 3's property, and we shouldn't have any say, and that I resent. But I would hope you ground your on scientific grounds that that's absolutely a bad place to build it. And I don't know if you have any documentation in that case. I know Ward 3 done this thing, dragged out for how many years? 10 years or something? And finally, I guess people gave up, and I would hope you have a logical reason. I don't know.
Well, a lot of us think we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two sides to it, but I think it's not handled well.
The members of the commission hold four doctorates.
Well, so do I, but...
Let the chair handle this, please.
Sure. I will leave and go home. I want order so we can move right along. I was being gracious to allow the gentleman extra time because we didn't have quite a few people here. He's already gone for his 5 minutes, and I'd like to do this in order, please. Okay?
Just one more comment, if I may, in response to your comment. I unfortunately usually teach on Tuesday nights, so I can't come to your meetings. And the last time I came was the summertime, and again, no one was here. But that's why I just wanted to show up. And so I may take 5 minutes tonight, but you may not see me again for another year.
It's okay. That comment was to my commissioner. It wasn't to you, dear. It's okay.
Thank you.
No further public comments? Oh, all right.
Jack.
May I respond to the...
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask if any of the commissioners wanted to respond back to the
gentleman.
I read your letter.
Well, I've written a number of letters, but the important factor here is that it's been the National Park Service that has been blocking this. I mean, the ANC had it, say, years ago. City Council had it, say, 5 years ago. The reason that the environmental impact study has been held up these past 4.5 years is because people inside the federal government don't want the road. It's got nothing to do with us. It doesn't matter at this point what we do. It doesn't matter at this point what City Council does, because the feds, the National Park Service, has been obstructing this. And I said 5 years ago, the only way to get that any portion of that road rebuilt was to endorse a compromise. The Burger Option G, which was one lane for traffic and one lane for bikers and hikers, that was the only option that had a chance with the National Park Service. But it was the road advocates who would not listen to any sort of compromise. They wanted the whole road, nothing but the road, nothing for bicycles, and that, in my opinion, doomed it at the federal level.
I have heard that the federal government blocked it. I can't imagine not having a bike path, too. Was there a room?
No.
You can respond back to his question, and we'll just go down from the next commissioner, whoever has a comment. Dave?
Okay. Evidently, we were told that there wasn't room for both two lanes and a bike trail.
I'm sorry, Greg. I got distracted. Excuse me, Greg.
May I?
Yes.
Does this work? Yes. I would like to see Klingel Road considered for as part of a long-term plan for east-west traffic. The Washington Council of Governments has done studies on the future of forecasts for traffic, and east-west traffic is supposed to double and treble and become much larger than north-south traffic. In trying to talk with people beyond the various studies, it appears that we, let's go back to the Macmillan plan of 2001 and 2002. And in that plan, they conceived of a parkway to handle east-west traffic, as well as, by the way, to be the host for government agencies along it, so combining. And one of them was to be this parkway that would be a kind of inner loop, and Honey Branch and a series of other parks that you can see on a map there represent partial purchases towards fulfilling that part of the Macmillan plan. Well, it's unlikely because the cost of Washington real estate for us to complete that, but there are still parts of it that we could do. For example, Piney Branch could be arranged with a ramp from Park Road onto Piney Branch and then over to 16th Street in a way that would divert essentially all the crosstown traffic through Mount Pleasant. Unfortunately, there's a 1920 law that commands, that says that that the superintendent or the National Park Service cannot do that without a swap. It seems to me that Klingle Road could be part of a swap in order to provide that, as well as also the budget this year was very difficult. They only had $2 million that they could allocate. Environmental study shows the Klingle Road Valley falling apart and about for catastrophic collapse. The only way that in the next 2 years we could save that space for any future use, is that if we went in now and did something. And this was apparently the only way that we could do it. Well, this is just touching on a few of the items that at least I've looked at and some of my friends have looked at to say that in politics and in public life, you seldom get all what you want. It's a matter of trade-offs. The issue is, Madam Chair, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let the record show at 7:17. We now have Commissioner Czar with us. And would you like to make a comment there talking about the closing of Klingle Road?
Were you asking a question about
yes,
it? Yeah, because I mean the irony is that I know that you support it because you work at like UDC or no, you work,
Northern
you teach Park. At, yeah, and it's a better commute for you.
Yeah, on rare
occasion. Yeah, I guess Greg gave the substantive reasons. Mine were scientifically based in terms of the congestion problem in DC and air pollution and the fact that the more roads you build, the more you encourage more car use. I think we have to work away from that. I mean, all of the evidence points to the lung disease in the city is abominable, and no one seems to really be addressing that. So this would be a symbol that we're at least trying to address the long-range solutions to the problems. That's the way I saw it. So.
Okay. Well, if we have no further... I apologize.
Our visit is here.
Call out. Gladys might want to
see.
Yeah.
Well,
I really don't need a microphone.
Oh, yes.
We need it for our records.
Actually, we just stopped in. We've been trying to get around to a lot of the ANCs.
Yeah.
It just so happens that...
Introduce yourself, please, for the audio recording.
Okay, I'm Chief Saunders. This is Sergeant Spots. I'm assigned to the 4th Battalion right over here, 3420 14th Street. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we've been trying to get around to a lot of the ANC meetings. It just so happens that you meet the same, that we're actually more in, I guess, Ward 4, I guess it would be Ward 4 of the ANCs. So what I'm going to try to do is maybe alternate coming from this one to, since we're in this area, coming from this one to the one on the 4th every other month. So you should expect to see somebody here, I guess, from Fire and EMS at least every other month, if that's acceptable and it's okay with the commission. Okay. What I really want to talk about is just to take up a couple of minutes of your time about some. A lot of people don't know about a lot of the programs that the Fire and EMS Department offer. The big one, and I'll leave some brochures here, some flyers here. The big one is what we call our Save You program, which is basically a smoke detector giveaway. What we normally do is once a month, We'll pick an area in the city, usually about a 4-block by 4-block radius, and we'll knock on every door, and we will we want to see if you have smoke detectors. No citations are being written, anything like that. We're just coming in to see if you have smoke detectors. We will change your batteries. We'll see if they're properly placed and that type of thing. And if you don't have any smoke detectors, we will install. We can install one per residence with a waiver basically saying that if your house catches on fire, it's not our fault because you have a smoke detector, you know, if your house burns down. But we will strategically place it for you and that type of thing. Another thing is if you have internet access, you can walk into any firehouse and get a waiver form, and we will come to your house within 24 hours and put the smoke detector up. Also, we, like I said, if you have internet access, you can go to dcfems.gov, so you can submit it that way. It'll go to our fire prevention division, and then we'll get it out to the companies, and somebody will come out and steal it. When we get it, we'll contact you within 24 hours to set up a day and time to come out and install your smoke detector. It's called our Save You program, smoke alarm, verification, and utilization. Like I said, we'll come in, we'll change your batteries if you need. If need be, we'll bring batteries with us, and we will install the smoke detector. I'll leave these, this has all the information on it that you need. I'll leave some of these red flyers here. And some of our other programs, we have the Home Fire Safety Inspection Program, and the phone numbers, I'll leave this as well. All the phone numbers are on here for all the programs that we do have. Like I said, a lot of people don't know about them. We will come out and inspect your home by appointment. You can just walk into your firehouse. We can call the number on here to get someone to come out to inspect your home. And this particular type of inspection is not we're not writing citations. We're coming out. We're just trying to see if your windows open easily. We're trying to see if you have extension cords running under your carpets or if you have a lot of stuff built up around your furnace or your hood over your stove has an inch of grease on it or something like that. Anything that's a fire hazard, we will point it out to you. Like I said, and we don't have to come back. If you wish, we can come back and see if you properly corrected the violations or corrected the problems or not. We'll just tell you what the problems, what we feel the problems are, and you can correct them yourselves. And so, like I said, that's one where no citations are written. We do have a fire prevention inspection program, which is basically, depending on your type of occupancy, your buildings will be inspected. These are for, like, apartment buildings and other types of buildings. Anything outside of a single-family home, we'll come out, and that one we come in, the fire prevention division, actually the fire companies do it, and fire prevention will do it on request. Make sure your fire extinguishers are the right height from the floor. Make sure your fire alarm systems work. And we don't enter the units. You know, so we're not going to come inside and see if you have a smoke detector in your unit or something like that. So that would have to be, that would fall under the home safety inspection. But these are done on a yearly basis, 2 or 3 times a year, depending on your occupancies. We have the blood pressure program, which, of course, anybody can walk into the firehouse anytime, get your blood pressure taken, get your blood sugar checked. Yeah, that's anytime, anyway. You can just walk into a firehouse and get that done. Or there's a number on here as well that you can call and just send to find out more information about that. We have the fire safety, I don't have the glasses on. Fire safety prevention. I really can't see. I don't know why I'm sitting there trying to act like I can see without the glasses on. Well, there are words on here. Okay, we have the fire safety prevention education program. Okay, again, that's by appointment. And that would be done in a venue such as this. We can have our fire prevention come out, and they will just tell you all about fire prevention, fire safety within your home, and that type of thing. And actually, that's my point. And the number for fire prevention is on here. CPR training is provided by appointment. Now, I used to be assigned to the training division. In the training division, I think it was the fourth Thursday of every month, you could come down, and we had what we call citizen CPR classes, where you come down and we teach you CPR. That's by appointment as well. But also, we have a number here for our public information office. You can call them, and they will set up a class. They'll send somebody out. Like I said, for example, in a venue such as this, they can teach you CPR, or you can have it, where, I guess, wherever. So this is like the perfect venue for something like that. We have the juvenile fire service program, where we actually have counselors on staff that can talk to little kids who are, if the kids seem to be too interested in fire or too interested in matches and that type of thing. We do have a juvenile fire service program where we have counselors in our fire prevention division that will come out and counsel these, actually counsel the families as far as this goes. And they have the senior fire warden program. It's felt that in nursing homes and that type of thing that it's better to have peers teach fire safety and fire prevention, that type of thing. So what we'll do, we'll try to, I think that's for a program for people 55 and up. We will actually teach you fire safety, and you can go around, like if you have a relative in a nursing home or a relative in a situation like that where you want to go in and teach fire safety and fire prevention in that venue, that's something we have that offer as well. Does anybody have any questions for me or this man?
Hi. As you know, the DuVille across the street caught fire. Remember, that was the five-alarm fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to ask a couple questions because after that, I actually observed it for a while between midnight and 1,
mm-hmm.
and then I got several calls from constituents and neighbors about what was going on because, you know, people noticed that the timing was uncanny. The tenants' rights group was supposed to settle with the landlord the next day for all the violations.
Mm-hmm.
And the place went up, and it appeared that no water was on for like an hour and a half till 1 in the morning. So I asked Jim Graham, and he forwarded my question, you know, from the community to a fire person whose email, I forget his name, I'm sorry. And they said, they reported the amount of water that was put on, and it seemed to satisfy the answers to the question. In that water was expended, you know. And I don't know about the timing of it, but there was water put on, and everyone was evacuated, so that was good. But then, from what I understand, the sergeant, the woman who was reprimanded for the way that fire was handled. And so I was just wondering if you knew anything about that, because she was on the radio. I heard her on PFW a few weeks back about being reprimanded about the way she treated that fire. And that her superior was supposed to be in charge of where everyone was, and there was some conflict there. And then the second question, so I was just wondering about that. And the second thing is, in terms of an arson investigation, it seemed like the debris was cleaned up within 48 hours, and I was just wondering what the extent of, what the results, if the results of an arson investigation are undergoing, are available to the public. I mean, those are just the questions that the community keeps having about this.
As far as the firefighter that was reprimanded, as much as I know about it, we have, of course, what we have what we call standard operational guidelines. And I think that it was felt that, to be even more specific, if you have a building like that, or a single family, the building in question, or a single family row house, or a detached single family home, or a garden style apartment, you're going to, if you dial 911, you're going to get 4 engine companies, which a lot of people don't know. Those are the shorter pieces of fire apparatus with the hose on them. You're going to get 4 engine companies. You're going to get 2 ladder trucks, which is, of course, the hooking ladder truck. Everybody knows those. And you're going to get, actually, you're going to get 5 engine companies. I'm sorry, you're going to get 5 engine companies, 2 ladder trucks, a rescue squad, a battalion fire chief, which is the one you were saying that basically in the car is responsible for where everyone goes, and you're going to get an ambulance on the call. The first due engine company is going to go to the front of the building. The second due company is going to go to the rear of the building, rear of the structure, and the third and fourth due pretty much there for water supply for the first companies and take another line and back them up. And the fifth engine company is going to sit on the independent water supply and wait for instructions. I think that the firefighter that you're speaking of, the fire officer that you're speaking of, was due in the rear. The second due company, the company that's due in the rear, is responsible for checking the basement of the structure. And I think the problem was some of, because that's a very large building.
The basement was sealed?
I think that the problem was that part of the basement had fire in it, and maybe the way they went into the fire didn't have, and this is what I heard, because that wasn't my shift, so I didn't actually conduct the investigation, but you hear things. And I believe that there was a problem or some kind of conflict with the basement report, because there was a large volume of fire in the basement, and I think it wasn't reported initially, so I think that's what came out of that. And your second question was, I think there was a person of interest. I think that there was a homeless person of interest in the last that I heard as far as the arson investigation, and that's actually all I know about that. But see, what I can do is I can get those answers from fire prevention.
I hate to interrupt you at this time, but I just want to say, these questions and the answers and what have you, we don't have the proper venue at the time for this discussion. I really feel that more of the community should be present when you're giving these answers, and you need to be more knowledgeable of, you know, all the details, because like you say, you're thinking and, you know, mm-hmm. what may have taken place or whatever. So I think, Jane, we need to hold that, and possibly if the community wants it, maybe we can set aside a time and place for that to go on. And going back to what your directive and your purpose was here tonight, I do thank you and I appreciate very much for you coming by to give us all this information, because it's very, very important to have. But that does bring up a couple of more questions. And like I say, maybe we can set aside a specific time for all of this, because it is elongating our meeting. But we do appreciate you coming by. Please do leave the information for us.
Okay.
You know, and so we can... maybe somebody else would like to work with me on that, because I'm interested in that, because I'm at Harvard Towers, which we've had our own share of fires. So I'd just like to, for us to move along, and thank you very much for coming. Please do leave the information for us.
Okay, sure.
Okay.
And I'll leave, I guess I'll leave you my card.
That would be fine.
And you can contact me maybe next month or the month after. I can get on the agenda.
Yes.
And it'd be more so expected. I know I just kind of showed up, so
right.
I'm sorry about that.
But it's okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Greg?
Just quickly, I know that just as a single commissioner with, but I have a lot of apartment buildings in my district. And I'm a member of a civic group that tries to serve all the apartment buildings in Mount Pleasant. And I know that there is a lot of consternation about the relationship that we have with the fire and EMS department. The statutory or the charter role of the ANC is to advise the agencies much more than we convene a meeting for you to come and address the neighborhood. And it seems to me that if you're going to be coming, and I'm glad you will be, because there is this large backlog of issues that I've heard about over many years.
Okay.
And I know at least our civic group has passed resolutions and sent to the fire department and never gotten a single response. So I'm looking forward to some way in which maybe we could talk offline and see if we can get some kind of two-way discussion and where you could better use the charter role of this institution, where we're supposed to be advising DC agencies much more than being recipients of information, and so that we can align ourselves with what we're here for, what we're elected for, and so that we can build a good relationship on that basis.
The police department has always had, I think, a more of a being out in the community type relationship and a more, I guess, receiving more advisory information than the fire and EMS department. So that's our purpose of just starting to get out here more so, because like I said, we haven't really been in that role. I'm sure that you have probably have a more better working relationship with the police department as opposed to the fire department. Really? Okay. Hopefully we can, like I said, build that relationship.
I'd like for us to develop
such a great relationship. We beat them up with it.
Okay. Again, I thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And moving right along with our meeting, and secretary's report.
Okay, I've distributed the minutes for the May 6th meeting. Are there any corrections offered to the May 6th meeting? No corrections? Then I'll take the May 6th minutes to be correct. I've distributed a CD, by the way, which has all of our audio recordings, all of our resolutions, all of our meeting minutes from January through May. And I will continue to update that as we go along. Everyone should have one of those. Mm-hmm. Okay, shall I proceed to the treasurer's report?
Yes, please.
We received today a response from the auditor on the quarter reports for the third and fourth quarter of 2007 with moderate disallowances of expenses because we have not done a good job of getting invoices and receipts in the past. I'm hoping that we will do better in the future. Those aren't very large numbers, but they represent about 40% of our expenditures, which is to say 40% of our expenditures were not adequately documented. That's not a good number. I really anticipate that we will do better henceforth. The second quarter 08 quarter report, I delivered that CD to the auditor on the 19th. We are now, as you know, undergoing an audit. And I took all of the records for that period of time, since 2005, I believe, and put them on a CD and delivered them to Mr. Barnum, and then offered to go down with the checkbook anytime he wants to review that and go over the contents of that CD. I have not heard back from him. So I am making some changes in the way we do accounting. Let's see, I have provided a financial summary. Let me see if I can find that. That is it. We started the year with $50,711. That's how much we received, the $5,441. Which gave us $56,000 on the 4th of January. And I summarized all of our expenditures from January to the end of May. A total of about $3,100 in expenditures, which leaves us $56,000 at the start after that receipt of the allotment, $3,000 spent, and $52,885 remaining. And with the correction for an outstanding check, that matches our bank balance. So our accounts are currently in balance.
Any questions about the treasury report?
Well, there's...
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry. I have been doing a great deal of this. I'm sort of rebuilding the system here. I'm undertaking a new approach to tracking our expenditures because, as I mentioned, our problem is that we don't have the matching documentation for our expenditures, which is why a substantial proportion of our expenditures are disallowed by the auditor. And that's something I want to see brought to an end. So I have... This is the way I'm going to be accounting for our checks henceforth. That is to say, the obvious parts, payee, the amount, the purpose. This is a reference to the invoice or receipt corresponding to that expenditure, if it exists. This is a reference to the resolution supporting that expenditure. This is what we have to do at the end of every quarter. And what we've done in the past is run around like crazy at the end of the quarter trying to find these things. And we don't find a lot of them, and that's why we've gotten in trouble. So I want to do this as we go along so that when the end of the quarter arrives, we will be in good shape. There are a couple here which are absent. Greg has had his computer problems, which is why a lot of this is the documentation has disappeared. There is one subtle problem here on our website hosting. Our only resolution justifying expenditures for website are inherent in the approved budget. And it's not quite correct to say that a budget is an authorization. A budget is a planning document. What we really should have is a resolution saying, yes, we are prepared to spend this amount of money for website support. We have not been doing that. That's something I would like to see us catch up on. We will see what the auditor has to say about the past expenditures which we have justified on the basis of an approved budget as opposed to an authorizing resolution. Because you note that quotation from the code. No expenditure of any amount shall be made without the specific authorization of the commission. And I don't think a budget agreement is a specific authorization. So I'm hoping that we will do better in this respect as well.
Greg, you have a question?
Comment. I asked about this to Gottlieb Simon, and he said that in practice, ongoing regular expenses accordance to a budget as will be accepted. As
okay, good. Thank you. That really helps, especially with, for example, our payment for the meeting room. I'm sure
yes.
That'll cover that. That's good.
It's what the obviously the intent is for it not to be something that where it's only in the budget and then there's no other detail. I assumed that the website, because it comes up every year, is one of these regular expenses. And another example would be the post office box.
I think those will be approved routinely because those are normal expenses.
Any further questions? No further questions, then we can accept the treasurer's report and the record. Any comments on?
Well, let me move on. I'm sorry, this.
Oh, I thought you were finished. Okay.
There's a lot been going on, Jeremy.
Okay.
Because we have to prepare a budget, too. And you will recall. Well, before I get to the budget, let me raise one issue here. I need a little help from the commission on this one. You recall that we passed a resolution supporting this Music in the Park event with Frank Agro, and everybody was happy with that. I think it was marvelous. And Dave was excellent about providing receipts. I've got the receipts, and also with citing the supportive resolution. So far, so good. The problem I have as treasurer is this. We said that we will provide $140 to cover the parks and recreation fees. No problem there. We also said that the resolution says we will help in advertising through web postings and printing, posting, and distributing flyers. Cost of advertising shall not exceed $100. The problem I have is that the reimbursement request I've got is helium for the balloons. And it's a little hard for me as treasurer to say that helium for balloons falls.
Yeah, I have to make a correction here. If you look at the receipt, it's for balloons filled with helium. It's not helium for the balloons.
Well, let me finish. I do have the floor, please. Let me finish, please. The question, remember, as treasurer, I cannot alone make these decisions. I have to have the support of the commission. Does the commission agree that that text can be interpreted to cover this purchase of helium or helium balloons, as the case may be?
Greg,
I move that the ANC 1D authorizes helium filled balloons as a mode of advertising an event, not just here, but
generally.
I have a question. Was there advertisement on the balloons?
Oh, yes. Symbolic advertisement.
Well, then it falls under that, then, my opinion.
So the commission agrees?
Wait. I think it would be would be a nice gesture, but I think the Treasury, I don't think they respect retroactive allotments. But in the event, I would interpret, like Stormy does, I would interpret, and printing and posting on balloons and distributing flyers, that you can interpret it like that. So I think the text supports it. Printing, posting.
Okay, any further comments on it?
Well, maybe we could generalize it, because balloons are often used.
Right now, let's just say, give me permission to write the check
then
and
I
pay for the helium.
Then I call for a vote.
All those in favor of okaying the $77.73 for the helium balloons, so just raise your hand. Yeah.
That wasn't my resolution.
Well, we have to vote twice.
Okay. I have, and all those opposed? Well, are you abstaining?
That wasn't the resolution that was on the floor.
We're going to vote on your resolution, G. I just asked the question of those in favor of agreeing with it, but we'll go back to your resolution
okay.
If it makes you happier.
No, it's just that since people are getting a little concerned about propriety on some things, I thought I would show that I'm trying to be a good boy. And
okay,
boy.
So can you state your resolution again? Because now I'm lost again. You state that, please? Let's go on.
And perhaps the secretary can make a few records of this. That is that ANC 1D authorizes the use of helium-filled balloons as an acceptable means of promoting an event.
Okay. Change of words with the same thing I said. All those in favor. Did I get a second? Oh, yes. Dave did second it already. All those in favor.
Discussion.
I'm sorry. Discussion. Jack.
Speaking as a treasurer, what I want is specific authorization to write this check. Going beyond that and trying to generalize and saying...
I accept that.
Greg, out of order.
Please. I really just don't think it's necessary for us to go there. What I would like to see is people write their resolutions with greater care so that we don't wind up in this kind of uncertainty.
Okay, all those in favor in letting the treasurer write the check to cover the $77.73, by a show of hands.
Thank you.
All commissioners agree. It's unanimous. Praise God. Let's move on.
Because I did accept the friendly amendment that to include as an addition that this be specifically approved.
Yes. Okay. I don't think we need to visit this any further, right?
Right.
Okay.
I do want to mention I have invoices at this point. Tony Grillo, $50 for posters. He did put up posters very nicely. Albert here for running the sound system right now. And $1,000 for Neil, who has submitted an invoice for 20 hours in the month of May. Is there any objection to my writing these checks at this time?
No objections.
Thank you.
I would like to ask, though, that in the future for these regular expenditures that we, because they're part of a regular process, that we do not need to go forward and approve each one by one.
Well,
using the Gottlieb Simon rule.
I understand that, but I think a $1,000 expenditure is sufficiently sizable that it requires a specific approval. I'm not going to write checks for $1,000 without the commission saying yes.
I agree. I think each commissioner should know about that before. I agree. Continuing on, Jack?
At some point we should take up the budget, but at the moment I'm perfectly happy to somebody else take the floor.
Okay. Anybody else want to go ahead with something else? You want to do the budget now?
Committee reports. Since Neil isn't here for the director's report.
Yeah.
Okay, we're moving on to community reports.
Committee reports.
Community quarter.
The Commercial Quarter Committee held a meeting last week
15 people attended. It was a three commission, including three commissioners, Jack, Dave, and myself. It was a meeting that I thought went very well. Almost all parts of the neighborhood were represented. There was a little tension because the two people from DDOT kept thinking that it was their meeting. And rather than the meeting as had been negotiated with Alice Kelly, where it was going to be a more general meeting and not just on her particular issue, which she had accepted in writing, but then at the time of the meeting didn't. I think it's worth noting that because we have a continuing problem with the agencies viewing the ANCs as because she had told me that what she was looking for was the ANC to call a meeting and publicize it and bring people in so that she could address the neighbors. And so even as of yesterday, talking with the new Ward 1 planner, Gabriella Vina, she continued to view that as our role. And I think it's noteworthy because it's something we're going to fight. I hope everybody saw my report of the meeting. And as a result, I prepared a resolution to include what I thought were the conclusions of it, having heard nothing serious about my report.
So, am I safe to assume that in your resolution is what you're presenting to the commission?
Yes.
Okay. Are we addressing this now, or are we moving on to the next committee's report?
It might be easy to combine it right now.
It might be easy to do what?
To consider it right now.
To consider?
The resolution right now for the parking.
Ah.
I don't know. I haven't prepared that.
Is this the resolution you're speaking of?
Okay.
I don't think we have a listing like that tonight, do we, Jack?
No, because I got
okay
an unfortunate number of inputs at the last minute, and I was busy taking care of my granddaughter.
Okay. All right. Well, you know how I feel. Children come first. So where's the resolution? Do you have that?
Is this the one, Greg?
Yes.
There is a request, Jack, from Jane to the first appearance of RPP to put in parens the meaning of it. I accept that as a friendly amendment.
While Jack's doing that, those who have read it, do you have any comment or discussion, Dave?
I'd just like to pass along one comment that happened at the Commercial Corridor meeting, which was a resident noted that the parking zoning was done on a street-by-street basis by petitioning of the people on the street. I'm not familiar with how many, what percent signatures they need or anything, but it is by petition, and that converting a street from unzoned to zoned without the residents petitioning is subverting what passes for democracy in this place. So that's the thorny issue I see here, and it's perhaps more of an appearance than an actuality, because the strips are small, and I'm not sure why we couldn't just get the people to petition to get those last remaining strips zoned. There must be somebody on those streets that would like that. Rather than just moving in and changing the process.
Jack, excuse me, Jack.
This has been a long-standing problem, namely that if the entire neighborhood is zoned for RPP, then a lot of people who come to Mount Pleasant will suddenly be faced with severe hardships, in particular the teachers at Bancroft and Stokes and Sacred Heart and such schools. Which is one reason, I think, why it's streets near Bancroft which remain unzoned, because there are people who recognize the need for on-street parking for teachers at Bancroft. Which is why the critical element here is that it shouldn't go all RPP until provision is made for these people whom we want to have come to our neighborhood. And it does say day pass, because what we want to do here is provide curbside parking during the day for people who come and work during the day, but then they go away at night, so those spaces are freed up at night, which is when our real parking problem occurs. And I should point out that it's been said many times, and was said in the parking task force several years ago, the block-by-block zoning system is terrible. I know of no other city that does it block-by-block, because the only consequence of doing it block-by-block is that all of the cars which, for one reason or another, do not have Ward 1 stickers cluster on whatever blocks remain. And as a result, you go around the neighborhood today and you will find plenty of parking available on 19th Street, my street, plenty of parking available on Lamont, plenty of parking available on 18th, because those streets are zoned. But as soon as you go to Monroe or Newton, you find the streets jammed. Not because there's any special demand for parking there, but because all of the unzoned cars cluster there. And that's just not fair. That's not fair to our neighbors. So we really do want to get past this block-by-block nonsense, but we want to do so in such a manner that we're not imposing a great hardship on the people whom we want to have come to our neighborhood.
I just want to do a point of information on that third line where the word include is. I believe an S is missing. Greg?
Thank you for the corrections. People are perhaps used to me being wanting to go and do background investigations behind these things. And what I learned is that...
Gee, make this brief, please. Come on, because the reason I said that is because I think this is the same thing that we visited already, and we had already agreed to that.
Well, it is a compilation of what we have more or less agreed to, but let me just say that I'm told that the intent of the executives at DDOT, and with the support of council staff especially, and several of the leading council members on the committee, they have all talked, and they want to move to a neighborhood ANC by ANC approach rather than by block by block. And so really the intent of doing this at this point is to use our fast-fading bargaining chip to get this in and edge it so that we can push for what will be an innovation in the city, is the day pass program. It's going to go away. Let's use it before it goes.
Oh, Dave.
Yeah, my only point is not in the value of having the neighborhood zoned or whether or not it was a good or bad system to begin with. It's just that this is the system we have. People know that they have to petition for zoning, and people choose not to do that. They should be let not to do that until the city decides to change everything, rather than some sort of pulling the rug out from under them. So what I suggest is we go to those streets that are holdouts and get somebody to petition to change it. Use the system, not subvert it.
Jane?
Maybe if it's amended to, like, the beginning of the fourth line, advice to work toward converting. That way, if the ANC sort of participates in encouraging the process, it wouldn't be a top-down thing, and it would show our sentiments about the best way to go. How does that sound as a compromise?
Greg?
You're welcome to suggest it as an amendment, because I've given my reasons for why I want to do it this way. Yeah, I must say that I have done a survey in eastern Mount Pleasant, and there are only a couple of small strips. And one of the strips that I thought was RPP, Jack has come back and done further investigation and showed that it was essentially RPP, rather, just that it had grown like topsy and the signs were all misleading, which is one of the advantages. I think that's true all over Mount Pleasant, and one of the advantages for going to a uniform system. So, but I have not done a similar survey in western Mount Pleasant. I'm sure Jack knows more about where the strips are, but I really believe this is the way to go and to do it quickly and clean things up. So, because there are lots of more parking issues that we're going to be facing, and it's going to get very complex. With this in hand, then we can go back and start to negotiate some of the other parking issues.
Any further discussion? Jack?
Yeah, responding to Dave's concern, I mean, I have gotten many inquiries from residents of the unzoned blocks in my district about how to get them zoned. Because I think if you took an overall poll of the neighborhood, you would get overwhelming sympathy, approval for zoning. The problem is, if you do it the old-fashioned way, then there is no provision whatsoever for household employees, no provision for contractors, no provision for school teachers. I have an angry email which arrived, a letter which arrived in my box just last night. In that rainstorm, a Lamont Street resident had a sewage flood in his basement. And he had a contractor out in front, parked out in front of us, pumping out his basement. The contractor got a ticket. That's just stupid. But the current law does not allow for this sort of reasonable use of curbside parking. So this is why I would say, yes, we want to go to all RPP, but only after a day pass system is implemented.
Okay. Can I get a vote to close discussion? Everybody in favor of discussion being closed?
Well, let's take a quick look at the text. I would prefer rephrasing lost strips to unzoned strips.
Accepted.
Jack, I'm just trying to keep my resolution shorter with one syllable words in order to please you, please the commission.
We have a comment that one of our constituents here wants to make. Does the commission allow me to let them make their comment?
She skipped her turn during public discussion, so she's welcome now, in my opinion.
Okay.
I would like to speak about the parking. Now, when 17th Street became residential parking, I could not leave my house. I could not leave my house 10 o'clock in the mornings and come back and find a parking space, because folks who work up here would park all the way down there. And it takes 51% of the folks who live in that block to petition to get it, and then you have to pay $15 a year for that residential parking. So if you think about it, I don't think you should enforce anything on folks who live in these blocks, because you don't know whether they want to pay that $15 every year or not. Plus, they do want somewhere to park when they leave their homes during the day and come back.
Yes.
Okay, Jack first and then Greg.
Yeah, in response to Mrs. Mitchell's query, which was very legitimate, But nobody is forced to pay for RPP if you can get along without the RPP provision. I'm sorry, that's probably not a very good argument. You'd wind up being unable to park in your block. Forget it. I think you're right.
A quick comment, Gladys. That's why there was a debate at the meeting last week about what some people said that it should be $15 further charge for these things. It is, and the new program should be. This resolution, if you look at the end of the fourth line under Y, it says at no cost. Sure, but this provides. It will probably get rid of. We also heard evidence that number one, that when you do this, when you go to RPP, it cleans out the out-of-state registration people. That really disappears, and that opens up a lot of spaces. And at least in several of the blocks where I've done a census, Jack has done a census, in some of these blocks, it's perhaps a quarter of the spaces are taken up by out of state. So we've been discussing this for quite a while, and this appears to be the best that we're going to be able to get. And here the resolution specifies. And there was a debate about it. Some people in the neighborhood want $15. But this resolution, if the ANC passes, it says zero cost.
Well, let me make a clarification on that, if I could, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Jack. Then Jane.
Greg is talking about the visitor passes. Let's draw a distinction here between the visitor passes and RPP for the residents. It's just the visitor passes that would be no cost.
Greg,
after
Jane.
I guess I have a question about your observation. I thought that having the RPP would prevent people who come into work during the day to be able to park without getting ticketed. I thought it would prevent that.
That is correct. So, that's why we went to the residential parking, because when 17th Street got theirs, it pushed the folks down.
I see. Okay. So this is good?
What?
This resolution? This resolution?
No. No.
Okay. Greg, last comment, please.
Well, I would like to see if the commission would accept an amendment to make further into a new paragraph and put a sentence in that says that the RPP permits are to be issued at no cost by telephone.
How are you going to do that when it already exists, Jack?
Unfortunately, that conflicts with the law establishing RPP. It requires that the administrative costs be covered by RPP fees.
Greater knowledge trumps good ideas.
Let me.
I withdraw. Well, we could. Yes, we could ask the council to do it. So you would second my amendment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's got the floor here?
I'm not even clear anymore.
Yeah.
Jack?
Yeah, I would like to offer one more change to this. That is to say, let's emphasize in that last sentence of the resolution, when the day passes and is implemented, let us say, only upon implementation of the day pass plan may the whole of Mount Pleasant be converted to.
I accept that as a friendly amendment. But I also ask that Jane and my amendment, and I want to celebrate her and I being on the same side now, yes, be given some shrift.
Okay, do we have all the wording in there now?
No, because Jane and I have a motion and a second.
You're so happy to do it, Jane and I.
So you want to put the text at the end? Whereas, you like that, don't you? No, I'm just teasing. And encourage the city to what? Abolish its fee for?
Use the pointer there, G.
Okay.
So Jack, know where you are.
Do a turn go to a new paragraph further. At the end of this, say that ANC1D advises that RPP permits